So good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm very pleased to be joined this afternoon by Brian, who is here to speak with us about his experience of participating in the Family Karma Retreat. Welcome, Brian.
Hello, Jen. How are you today?
I'm excellent. How about you?
I'm doing really well. Nothing to complain about on this end.
Excellent. So, yes, do tell. I know that you had the opportunity to participate in the retreat when it was held in North Carolina. And
yes,
given that it's coming up in Pennsylvania, we thought it would be fun for folks to hear someone's direct experience of getting to participate in the retreat.
That retreat started the very second I read the description of the retreat, because the word family triggered all this information, triggered just this whole avalanche. I mean, I was literally stunned over just the word family, and I went, oh, I got to go to this, because conditioning
Exactly. And I just want to stop and just quickly underline that, Brian, that what's so fun about that is I think often people will run screaming in the other direction.
Right. Yeah.
Okay, well, I'll be skipping that retreat this year. I'll just do something else. I'll go on vacation.
Yeah.
Right?
There's another one I can go to later. Yeah.
Exactly. It's a different topic. That's much better. But instead, realizing, oh, wow, this is a huge opportunity, and going straight towards it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was fun because there was all this resistance that came up.
Uh-huh.
For the first time, I really noticed that, you know, part of the fun is just driving through the resistance.
I just missed one key word, Brian. Part of the fun is?
Is driving through the resistance instead of thinking that it shouldn't be there.
Yes.
That somehow if it was okay, there would be no resistance. I'm like, oh, yeah, I'd love to go, you know, to family retreat. But it's so much fun to have that come up and go, okay, well, I'm just going. And listening to the voices scream. And, and it was amazing when I got there, because it was really about, family is a word that's like a metaphor. It's not a real thing. So conditioning kind of makes up what that is. And when I got there, the whole thing for me was just about finding out what my relationship was right now with the metaphor word family, what that concept was. It was beautiful.
Go ahead.
No, I was done.
Well, just the piece that I think is so fun is that very process that you described so there's all this resistance that comes up. And what I saw when you were saying that was, and it's not as if, you know, if I do run scream in the other direction, that's fine, right? I'll get to encounter it whenever I'm ready. But that's the thing, is that it's going to be there driving the suffering in my life, whether I choose to turn towards it and take it on and look at it or not. And so you chose to do that. And what I think is so interesting in what you're saying about the topic of the retreat, and I actually got to participate in it as well earlier in the year, is that that feels to me like very much what the retreat facilitated, is that those very, those habits of suffering, of karma, you know, the retreat talks about family karma, that got put in there at such an early age, much so that I had no idea they were there. They're just invisible. It felt like the retreat really facilitated bringing those to the surface to get to see them instead of having them be invisible behind me driving everything.
And there is so much emphasis on the whole relationship issues with family that I think sometimes I would be in places where I would think, well, it's not an issue. Which was amazing when I saw, wow, the family retreat, and ego's going, yeah, we're not going to that. I'm like, wow, it is an issue. It is something that's, you know, in my life that's still, you know, apparent. What a great opportunity to go and sit back and go, so what is the karma outcome? What am I dealing with here right now? Not what happened. It's like, what am I dealing with here on the retreat? Yeah.
Exactly.
Outstanding. Yeah. Yeah, and
that's the whole point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's very powerful. It was it was extremely powerful, and mm-hmm. it was one of those things where the retreat just kept getting better, and better as time went on, as I sort of more or less allowed myself to just be there.
Yeah. That's interesting that you say that, Brian, because I'm really, as you said that, I had a distinct memory of when I participated in the retreat, that was exactly so, that it just kept getting more and more powerful, and that people were commenting on that through the course of the days of the retreat, because there's such a progression, sort of a spiral to it, that takes you deeper and deeper into kind of seeing what's going on.
Yeah, it was like being on it was like being with my family, seeing what family was. I don't know how else to put that, because there's so much intimacy that's involved with being there with Sangha. And it's such a safe place to sit back and allow myself to go, okay, you know, like what is going on with this right now? Outstanding opportunity, I think.
Well, and it sounds like what you're saying, you're using that word family in the way we all wish it would be, right? That seeing kind of Sangha and being, we're actually on a retreat right now and very much having that experience that, wow, to get to practice alongside all of these amazing folks in the privileged environment and so get to really have kind of the best of what we would hope family would be, while providing the safety to look at, you know, some of what got put in place in our actual families long ago.
Yeah, and it's a lot of fun, because you begin to see there's a dichotomy going. You begin to see, like, how much unreal the whole metaphor of family is, and then how limiting it is to think of family as just your biological or wherever you came from. The family is literally so much bigger than that. And it is so much more beautiful than that. What a great thing. You know, you couldn't ask for more.
Yes, exactly so. What a great thing.
Yeah, what a great thing.
Yeah. Well, and one of the things that I so appreciate about the retreat is the creativity in it. You know, there's Ashwini brings such a talent to all these fun, sort of interesting ways to come at things. And as Sherry says, you know, we're always talking about the same thing in practice, because which is so helpful, right? Because if there were a billion things to remember and to try to learn and all these different skills we had to train in, it would be overwhelming. But it isn't. It's very straightforward, right, what we're talking about, what we're doing. But it's so much fun to come at it from all these different ways, kind of peek at it in this window and then have try over here with this. This really makes it fresh and fun. And new.
Yeah, there's an energy that occurs because of what we're doing on the retreat. There's this energy that just keeps building. And part of it's because it's, well, look at it from this way and look at it from that way. And in an environment that's safe to do that in, you're just, I mean, it's all okay. So, and yeah, we're always kind of, you know, like, projection's a wonderful thing, what can I say? you know, conditioning and projection, what else is there in life? You know, I mean, it's so much fun to be able to look at that. So, and especially with Sangha, especially with family.
Yeah. And I have to say that I'm jealous, actually, if I'm to be honest, of the people who got to do the retreat in North Carolina and the folks who are going to Pennsylvania who are in the year-long retreat and are getting to do that retreat now. Because, I mean, I will say, okay, so I had the fun. Maybe I also had the advantage of kickstarting the year-long retreat with the Family Karma retreat. So I guess there's good points to it either way. But I truly think that the two things go hand in hand so well together, because of the process that we're doing in the year-long retreat and that kind of going back and looking at how all those pieces got put into place to begin with is really, they're very complementary.
It all fits. I mean, it all fits very well. And I'm excited because I'm going to the family retreat. This will be the second family retreat.
You're going to the Pennsylvania retreat?
Yes, I am.
Oh, Brian, yeah. You shouldn't have told me that. Now I'm really jealous.
Yeah, well, I just thought I'd throw that in. Yeah.
I tell you what, I will vicariously experience it through your...
You're more than welcome. I mean, I got so much out of it that I'm going to see what's going to happen next.
Good for you. Good for you. I said that to Ashwini the other day. I said, I wish I could do that. I mean, just over and over. There's something, I mean, with any retreat, really, but doing it again, boy, that's powerful. Really, really powerful.
It is. Yeah, it really is, because you begin to realize, you know, how much there is there. How enriching the environment is. And it's always different. It's never the same thing. It's always different. Yeah.
Which is so good to see, because, first of all, you're different, right? As Sherry always says, you're different.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're in a room with a completely different set of people. And how much of retreat is being with, as everyone else's experience informing our own? So it's like a whole, it's like a beautiful art project. I always think about that in group. We all sit down, you know, on a Sunday morning at the monastery or whenever it is, and none of us has any idea what together we're about to create. And that's true of every retreat. It's like an art project that we all create together, and we have no idea what it's going to be.
That is such a beautiful, that was put so well. That is such a beautiful reflection of what that is, what you just said. I really appreciate that you said that, because that is really a beautiful image.
Yeah.
I mean, it sort of defines practice in a way for me, from that angle. That's just gorgeous. Yeah, very well said.
Yeah, it really is. Well, Brian, we're at the top of the hour. Was there anything else you wanted to add in before we end?
No, just that I love Sangha. It's my family, and I just think we do so much good work.
We do. Amen.
And thank you, everybody.
Yeah, well, and thank you for being here this afternoon to share your experience.
You're more than welcome. It was a pleasure talking
to
you.
Thanks, Brian. Take good care. Okay, bye-bye. And Ashwini, we'll turn it over to you and Sherry.
Thanks, Jen. Thanks, Brian. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Ashwini.
It's funny to say not welcome to Making a Change for Good.
I know.
Welcome to Open Air. I had to pause.
Oh, I'll tell you what. After that, I am so excited to go to the Pennsylvania retreat. I can't wait.
Yes. Yes. Well, and you know, it's funny, Sherry, when we were creating that retreat, it was right on the heels of How You Do Anything is How You Do Everything. And that particular way in which we could look at circumstances in our lives that allowed us to get such a rich perspective into the suffering as it happens now.
Yeah. 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 That I really appreciated Brian making that point and underlining it. That it's now, right? Now is what we're looking at. It would be great if I had been a child and I went through all of that, and then I grew up, and that's all behind me. But sadly, we drag it around with us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I know that for a lot of folks, because we've had this conversation, there's resistance to doing the retreat because I've worked through so much of that trauma and that what happened to me and all of that. And the interesting thing is we're not focusing on that.
That's right. That's not what we're doing at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. But people are just going to have to come there and see. As Mother Teresa would say, come and see.
Come and see. Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. Well, I have a few announcements, Sherry.
Okay.
If you're already meditating in the morning or wish to start, why not enjoy the extra boost of meditating with Sangha? Virtual meditation groups provide 30-minute conference call meditation sessions that include the daily recollection and meditation bells from the monastery. For a full schedule of virtual groups, including new group times just added, visit the virtual meditation groups webpage at livingcompassion.org. Bring conscious compassion.
Fun way to start the day.
Fun way to end the day.
Yes, exactly, depending on where you live, huh?
That's right. Bring conscious, compassionate awareness to your Saturday tasks or any project you choose at an at-home working meditation retreat on August 24th. The day includes exercises, facilitated virtual discussions, mindful eating, and designated work periods. Also in August, Go ahead, Terry.
Well, it's just like being at the monastery. So it's a little, for somebody who hasn't been to the monastery, they have a little tiny virtual trip to the monastery.
A working meditation, a day of working meditation at the monastery in your own house.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. It's very
also
good.
In August, a six-week conference called Retreat in Recording and Listening Training will teach the six key skills of the recording and listening practice. We think you will find these calls to be fun, experiential, and transformative. The new class is on Thursdays beginning August 29th. And as Brian and Jen were talking about, the Family Karma Retreat in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania is not an exploration of childhood trauma or family dynamics from a content perspective, but an investigation of the ego, of the story of me. Through this exploration, we will be able to see how that story dominates us today and will practice the tools needed to transcend ego's control. This retreat, September 2nd through the 7th, includes yoga, meditation, and guidance with you, Sherry.
Mm-hmm.
And right before that retreat, on Sunday, September 1st, spend an evening with Sherry in York, Pennsylvania, on the topic, Practicing in Difficult Times.
That's
and
right.
And then finally, the powerful There Is Nothing Wrong With You retreat offers foundational work in going beyond self-hate and is challenging, joyous, scary, and loving, and among the most important work you will ever do. A retreat is coming up in October. For these and other practice opportunities, visit livingcompassion.org.
Wow.
It's a blockbuster summer.
It is.
It is. And are we ready to start the show, Sherry?
Yes, please.
Well, I have a question from someone in Sangha who doesn't live in a time zone that's conducive to joining the retreat, and so they requested we read their question on air. And here it is. And this is a person with whom you had a conversation on the morning radio show and invited her to call into open air. And here's the background.
Did she say, I can't do that because it'll be the middle of the night?
She said it would be difficult for her to do that. Yes.
Yeah. Because to get up in the middle of the night and do this. So, yeah, I remember that. And so we talked about if she would write in. Then the host, whom we thought was Michael, but then we get you, would read her question. So, all right, I'm up to speed. Go ahead.
In our conversation, Sherry was narrating the possibility that comes with practice of responding to ego's violence with flippancy and a refusal to take its aggression to heart. As I listened to her, a question dropped in for me regarding some specific content. And I asked about responding to aggression from other people with a similar refusal to take the malintent seriously. Sherry said that is dangerous and best not to do, as other egos want to be taken seriously, and it's best to disengage from the situation. Our time to speak ran out here, but Sherry asked me to write in with the specific content at hand. Here is the content that I was trying to speak to without speaking all of it. The short version of the whole story. In my current living situation, my roommate treats me with outward aggression and anger on a fairly consistent basis. I have been working for months to find an affordable alternative living situation, but it has taken some time. In the past, I remember feeling anger and aggression directed at me and taking it to heart, and remember it strongly impacting how I regarded myself. Now, at this point in my practice, I'm noticing that when I feel the aggression directed at me, I'm able to examine the content of the moment and speak to that. I do my very best to take the underlying concern being shared with sincerity and respect. However, inside, I feel a real flippancy towards the tone and aggression. I feel an inclination to imagine that there is some possibility that the vitriol directed at me is likely in collusion with ego. It feels as if there's some kind of invisible protective barrier this creates around my internal self. I feel centered. I feel that there's nothing wrong and that there's nothing wrong with me. I feel that the tone and disturbing discourse is unpleasant, but not a measure of who I am or who my roommate is either, for that matter. It will pass. That I can attend to the question at hand, the content being brought up, and also continue doing what I can to change my living situation, which will happen by the end of the week. So in an unspoken way, I do feel like I'm not taking the ego in the room seriously. I'm careful to be as respectful as possible about what is unfolding, especially because how can I know what is ego in someone else when I'm constantly discovering what is ego in this experience of being this human? In any case, it does seem just like providing more fodder for the fire, maybe many different fires, by being outwardly flippant. I imagine I saw a glimmer of recognition in how Sherry narrated a refusal to internalize a harsh and negative tone as truth about myself in an entirely different piece of content than the conversation at hand. But it caught my attention and my heart leaped at the opportunity to be able to make helpful connections and receive guidance about specific content in my life that I happen to be examining through the lens of practice that very day. Yashua, and in deep gratitude.
Goodness gracious. All right. you might need to help me out with this, Ashwini.
Okay.
So it seems to me like what is being said. So what, if I recall correctly, what we talked about on the morning show, on the year long, it is that process of basically making fun of the ego inside the head. That when it says what it says and does what it does, we can just make jokes about it when we are disidentified, when we're stepped back and when we see it for what it is. But my concern about somebody who is aggressive and hostile, an external person doing that could be dangerous, right? So it seems to me what she is describing is the ability to realize that what she can do with an external person is, number one, recognize projection for what it is. So this other person is having whatever experience they're having, and it's theirs. She seems very clear that what they're experiencing is not her experience, and that it doesn't say anything about who she is. It's that other person's projection. They live together. Therefore, it's important that there's the ability to be respectful and attentive to somebody else's concern, but not to be confused by the tone of it or the choice of words or the attitude or the emotion or whatever else is going on. So if it's a case of deciding who cleans the bathroom, that's something that we can address, and all of that other stuff is just other stuff. And looking to see where that comes from, it's true. All we can really do is look to see the best we can where we are coming from. So if I get defensive, if I feel hostile towards the person, I can recognize all of that going on. If it's upsetting, if I feel afraid, if whatever else is going on, and depending on the level of practice, of course, it's possible to see all of that going on and still choose how one responds. Mm-hmm. Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah.
Does it feel like I'm tracking so far?
I think so. I think what I'm hearing you saying is that the practice is to stay centered, not to leave center no matter what. And
yes,
if we're at that centered place, it's possible to see that the person is acting out of ego or not. It doesn't matter really. But to let them have their own experience to have our own experience, to practice with what's arising for us in identification, but staying at center regardless, and then still choosing to act out of center, out of kindness to address the content that's coming up. That
yeah.
it might not actually be helpful in that situation to be flippant to the ego
oh.
we might project is the other person.
No, in fact, I'm going to stick with that. I was talking with somebody about it afterwards, and he was quoting some fellow who's some kind of expert in the field, who basically said, yeah, you know, go ahead, you know, make a joke of whatever it is. And I said, you know, that's a great great piece of advice if you want to give it to a man. But but women have a different a different situation, and so to meet aggression with flippancy or with hostility or aggression, it's really important to be very attentive to the fact that it could result in physical danger. So. You know, the same rules don't apply. Now, there may be women who have an attitude of, well, I can take care of myself, and I'm not afraid of him, and, you know, if he wants to get violent, well, I can get violent too, which is great. And if you know that about yourself and that's what you want to do, that's fine. But I would never encourage anybody, male or female, to goad somebody who is in a hostile or aggressive or violent place. There's just no sense in it. And beyond that, it's not kind, right? Mm-hmm. And so if we can step back into as centered a place as we can and diffuse the situation with as much loving kindness as we can bring to it, then that's great. And then, of course, we go off and we process it like crazy in whatever way, you know, we get out the recorder and we talk to the mentor and we look at, take advantage of an opportunity to see what's going on with us. Engaging with violence or hostility or aggression, it's just, I can't see an advantage to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and it's, in some ways it maintains what's compassionate for all.
Yes, yes. Yeah,
that somebody stays in authenticity and center always.
Yeah, and the thing is, as long as, and of course she's doing what she can to get out of the situation, and as long as she's clear that she doesn't need to take any of it on or take it personally, that's the work that we're doing, right? That what mm-hmm. somebody else is doing is theirs. That's them. People don't do things to people because the person it's being done to deserves it. People mm-hmm. do things to people because they want to do those things to people. And if we take it personally, then we do ourselves a tremendous disservice.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, one more point, that disservice, it serves ego.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, and what dropped in is, it's that both those places, right? Just because we are kind and respectful and don't meet the aggression with the aggression doesn't mean that it's a contest which we have to, and we have to stay in that situation. Right? So
get out.
Get out of that situation. And while we're doing that, protect ourselves. And in some way, protect the other person by not choosing to, you know, red flag to the boat.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, I don't know how we did, but hopefully she'll hear this and she'll let us know.
Yes. All right. I'll write to her and let her know that we answered her question.
All right. Very good. Or at least we spoke to it.
Well, we spoke to it. That's right. And she can let us know if we answered her question.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Here's our first caller, Sherry, and you're now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, this is Judy from California.
Hello, Judy.
Hi, Ashwini and Sherry. I'm calling for some guidance, Sherry. You know, I've been working with the 200 approach for quite a while now, and just recently my Zen coach gave me the assignment again. And what I noticed was when I did that, when I let the sad one talk about all that was going on, there was this other layer of upset when I was listening to her. Like there was a whole other round of get over it. What have you got to complain about? Does that make sense? There was a whole other layer of upset.
Yes, of course.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
And so I didn't quite know what to do except to do the same thing with that person, you know, let it get all that out. But I just wondered if there was another way I could work with that.
Well, you know, that's very kind of you. I would bet, I don't know this, and you can tell me if this is not accurate, but I would bet that second person was not a person.
Oh. That was just conditioning listening to it.
Just conditioning. Uh-huh. Because you know, if, I mean, I suppose you could, you know, you could have some kind of a malcontent teenager or something with an attitude like that. You know, what are you complaining about? You have nothing to complain about, especially if they wanted to follow it up with, let me tell you what a real problem is, okay?
But
generally speaking, that kind of conversation is just ego, is conditioning, wanting you not to talk to the person who is upset or sad or struggling or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So usually that's what that layer is. And we have any number of layers, of course, between what's actually going on with the human being and all of the ways that ego protects itself from authenticity.
Uh-huh.
Because if you feel sad, something happens and you're sad, and you feel that feeling, I mean, there's not too much else to say about it, is there? You
mm-hmm.
feel that feeling. It's
mm-hmm.
sad.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's, you know, people feel a loss. Maybe you lose a relationship or you whatever it is that happens in life. That causes us to feel sad,
mm-hmm.
and you feel that. That's kind of the end of the story.
Mm-hmm.
When it turns into a story, we know it's been taken over.
Okay.
By something that wants that to continue.
Uh-huh. The content that I was working with was the torture that this being feels by all the stories that I'm listening to all the time.
Uh-huh.
Does that make sense? You know, it just the pain of being tricked by, buying into conditioning. And then this other, that was another layer of conditioning, just,
Right. Yeah, uh-huh. Get over yourself.
Right.
Uh-huh. In other words, get over yourself and stay in that system of being beaten up by conditioning.
Uh-huh.
Right? Because what you're doing, Judy, is seeing through that system, right? So here is a person who has been paying attention long enough to realize I am listening in my head to an abusive conversation.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
And I was talking about the pain. The pain of that.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, it's awful, right?
Yes.
It's suffering. It's kind of what the Buddha was talking about, right?
Right.
It's suffering. And why do you do that? Well, because you have a habit of doing that is a lifelong habit that goes back before you can actually remember.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So that's been going on all of your life, that process. And so even though you know that process is going on, and you know you don't want to do that because it causes suffering, you still have a habit of doing it. And you're attempting to break that habit. So ourselves.
Okay.
Let's take it into another arena. Say you smoke cigarettes.
Mm-hmm.
And you've done it for decades, right? But now you realize you really need to quit this because it's taking an obvious toll on you, and you don't know about the toll that you don't know about.
Right.
And so you decide that you're going to quit. And a voice comes in that says, oh, for God's sake, get over yourself. Have a cigarette. Where do we think that voice would
sure.
be coming from?
Clearly from that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. It's self-hate.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's egocentric, karmic conditioning, self-hate. What else could it be? Anybody who cares about you would say, yeah, it's tough. It's really hard, and you can do it. Let's just stay with it. It's practice. Just keep practicing. Just keep coming back, keep coming back, keep coming back. That's a person who cares about you and who is on your side.
Okay.
Same process.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, then, Judy, go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, so then I was just going to ask about the next step. And the way of working with this is to see that that's conditioning and keep listening to the recording over and over until the genuine taps in or tap into the authentic self. Is that what you're suggesting?
Well, that you will continue to talk with the person who is in pain because in suffering because of that process. And
okay.
And as you continue to interact with that person, then you will see more clearly that level of conditioning that's there to try to get you to stop doing that.
Okay, okay. And it's so fascinating, Sherry, because the other take on it is either this mean, hateful, get over it, or it's collapsing into tears and there's nobody there except the sad one.
Yeah, well, that's where practice kicks in,
uh-huh.
right? Because what you are going to have to do is to become, and it's not, you know, it's a become what you already are.
Uh-huh,
okay?
Right.
You're going to need to become the unconditional love that can care for that person.
Mm-hmm.
Because anything, a real person. So, you know, people would get all hung up over children, right? Abused children. Well, an abused child, no matter how abused that child is, that child, when encountering unconditional love and acceptance, is going to go for the unconditional love and acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
What's not going to go for that is ego.
Right.
Because ego wants to stay in that story because that's what gets it the attention that it thrives on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So, mm-hmm. again, you know, there's an abused dog, okay? And every time somebody raises their voice, it cowers,
uh-huh.
right? But if nobody raises their voice, it won't cower.
Mm-hmm.
All right? And
right.
so in the same way, if that person who collapses in tears continues to do that, even though there is unconditional love and acceptance, support, caring, that sort of thing, if that person does not get on board with the program, then I'm afraid we're going to suspect we've found another non-person.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. So it's just two versions of the same coin. And both are interfering with tapping into the authenticity that's already there?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And that's a very likely scenario because we're in the world of duality.
Yes.
So you get pulled over to this side, and then you get pulled over to that side.
Uh-huh.
You know, there you are in tears. Why don't you just get over yourself? And
yep.
then you're back in tears. And then, oh, for God's sake, get over yourself.
Right.
And a person can live a lifetime being, you know, for me, it's the ping pong table,
uh-huh.
right? Being that ping pong ball just smacked back and forth.
Right.
And so if that's the case, then you're looking for a real human being who is trapped behind that.
And the way to find her is continue listening, getting to know better.
That's
the person
right.
That's hurting. Okay. Okay.
That's right. You just stay with it. That's why recording and listening is such a fabulous tool, right? Because if a person will stay with it, everything is going to be revealed. You're going to hear it all. You're going to see it all.
Uh-huh.
Because this system cannot maintain itself under scrutiny.
Okay.
So you keep looking, and you're going to see it. And then you're going to tell me every step of the way, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
good. Thank you. This is very helpful. I know what to do. I know my homework now.
You got your homework. You got your assignment. And it's exciting, isn't it? Being trapped in that stuff is not uplifting or exciting. But being on the hunt, that's exciting.
Yeah, I can get that.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you both.
Thank you.
Bye. Go
Bye-bye.
Happy.
Thanks, Judy.
Go happy.
It's just wonderful to hear the practice that practice in practitioners and the love of practice, right, Sherry? Because
yes.
It's exactly that, the hunt, that we're no longer just subject to ego or the voices. We're so interested and motivated to assist that human being to transcend suffering.
Yes.
And so we'll
yes.
do whatever it takes. And I want to
whatever
know what
takes.
That is. And when I get that guidance, I'm going to go off and do it and then tell you about it.
Yes. And you know, what I just saw when you said that, Ashwini, it's like, here a little baby is born in the world and everybody can, you know, just stop and think of themselves as that little baby. And then there's everything that happens to that little baby as that little baby grows through childhood and into adolescence and young adulthood and adulthood. And all this stuff happens, all this really awful stuff happens to human beings. I have yet to encounter a human being who can say, yeah, nothing bad ever happened to me. Quite the opposite. And so if we had a chance to go back and get that little baby and raise that little baby up the way we wish we had been raised up, that's what we have a chance to do in practice.
Mm-hmm.
We can become the unconditionally loving parent to that human being who has yet to have that experience.
Mm-hmm.
We can do that. That's what the Buddha taught us to do.
Mm-hmm.
That's what practice is. We become unconditional love so that we can save a suffering human being. Fabulous process.
It is fabulous because the underlying assumption in the process is that every human being can do it.
Oh, absolutely. All
in other words, we have the capacity to do it.
Yep. Oh, definitely. Unconditional love is what we are.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're tapping into. The more convinced
mm-hmm.
we become, that's what Judy was describing. And the more
mm-hmm.
convinced we become of that, the more that's what's on the hunt, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, Sherry, we're going to take a little break to see if my technology skills include the ability to hear from our recording and listening program. So, let's see.
And then we'll see, and good Lord willing, we'll be back.
Yes. Here we go.
All right. Sounds good.
Recording and listening is one of the most powerful tools for ending suffering. Recording and listening is based on a radical idea that rather than being lost in a conversation and conditioned mind, we can live in what's true, what's real, what's arising in life in the moment. With recording and listening, we develop the powerful skill of directing the attention, enabling us to access the wisdom, love and compassion that is our authentic nature. We have a 6-week virtual class to train in this amazing tool and experience its benefits. Sangha who have taken this class are saying that learning to direct the attention opens up endless possibilities and so often provides clarity and hope. Others report that finding refuge in my own voice and strengthening the awareness of the mentor is both transformative and powerful. Now is a great time to sign up with a recording and listening trainer. This class is perfect for brand new folks and old timers alike. To sign up with an individual trainer, simply email rltrainer@livingcompassion.org. Please check the website for quarterly group classes as well. Experience the joy of presence with the support of recording and listening.
All right. Sherry, are you back?
It worked. Yeah.
It worked.
Very good.
The first time ever. I'm very proud of myself. All right. I don't know how Michael worked that magic, but it worked for me today. So, right?
Right. Good.
And so here's our next caller, Sherry. Caller, you're now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Gail in Flagstaff.
Well, hello, Gail.
Hi. So this morning on the radio show, Ashwini was talking about it's a mirror, and that the mirror is a false image, and it looks the same, but the presentation is flipped, and it's not how it actually is. And you were going to talk about that more on open air tonight, and I got to this late. Did you already talk about it?
No.
Cool.
But that's an excellent reminder. Yeah. So I'm going to start off by asking Ashwini to talk about it. And then we can jump in. How about that?
Cool.
All right.
Thank you for putting me on the spot, Sherry.
You're very welcome. Anytime. It was either you or me, sister, and so I you're under the bus.
Well, what I always, you know, I often use the image that of photography, right, that we have a negative that gets developed, which is just the opposite, that it's not what is, but it's what is not. And I had that same experience if you look at life in the reflection, then actually it looks like life, but isn't life, it's just a reflection. And that's what ego is. It's a reflection, but it's not life, but we think that it is. And the clues are very subtle, because if we really look at the reflection, it's very, very different than experiencing life.
And so if I were to add this to it, am I on track? So it's not just a reflection. It's also an interpretation.
That's right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes.
That's what. So the way we often talk about it is that the life unfolds, the moment manifests, right? So there's a new moment, and ego, the conditioned mind, that faculty that we have of interpreting and imagining and that sort of thing, says, oh, that's that, 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 that. And we can watch that happen if, you know, maybe you're somewhere and you can almost see something, but not quite. Maybe it's dusk or early morning, or it's far away, or your eyes are going, or whatever is happening. And then it's, oh, I see, it's, okay? And so it's that, so it was always there, whatever it is, was there, but I got it when that interpretation of mind told me what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Is that kind of on track?
Yes, yes, and when I hear you say that, I think it's that place of, it's always helpful to get a good example, right? Because I think what you're pointing at, the mind tells you the story about what it is,
yeah,
rather than being present to what it is. So the mirror,
that's right,
is sort of reflective of the mind, the faculty of being able to say something about, and therefore it has to be based on life, but it isn't life. It's about life.
That's right, because thinking and language are metaphorical.
Yes.
Right? So if I said, and I will on occasion, how does that feel? Well, it feels hard. Okay. What's hard? Where do you feel hard? Right? And that's the breakdown, right? That by the time things are run through mind, they are no longer what they are. They're an image of based on whoever it is that's interpreting it. All right, let's see how we're doing with Gail. Gail?
Yes. Right.
Are you with us?
Yes, absolutely. This tracks completely with what I've been working with myself, which is like getting to the feeling of it. The sense, it's not even a feeling, it's the sense of it. And you have to skip what the mind's telling you to get down to that body sense, that heart sense, and then you know. I just had this conversation this weekend with some other practitioners, and one of our practitioners is getting very, very old and starting to lose some of her faculty, so to speak, and my mother is also getting dementia, but the anxiousness and the fear about it is that you're worried about it instead of just flowing with it. And if you can get out of your mind and into your heart, into this feeling sense, everything's okay there, even if you can't remember what's going on or even know what's going on.
So, that's right. And that is so perfect, Gail. It's such a picture of it's only a problem for ego. If we want to know what we are and what ego is, that's a perfect picture of it.
Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I can't remember what something is called. So what?
Yeah.
Did it go away because I can't remember what it's called? But for ego, that's a perfect opportunity to just strike terror in a person's heart because you're losing your mind. And what does that mean? You're losing your sense of self. What does that mean? You're losing, ego is losing its ability to control.
And you can't meet standards anymore. You can't, you know, you have to actually literally just relax and trust life and trust other people to care for you. And when you do that, guess what? They care for you. It works. It's
a
good deal.
Yeah. So we have somebody who's been in the Sangha forever who is a Catholic sister. And her job is to take care of older sisters, not physically, but mentally and emotionally and spiritually and that sort of thing. And so she tells a story, and there's more than one, but this one in particular who got to the point where there was just nothing there, right? She could not remember anything. And she was so happy. She was completely happy. And so you would walk in to the room and she would be so happy to see you. Wouldn't have any idea who you were, but just be delighted to see you. You could walk out and walk in a second later, and she would be just as happy to see you. And we're talking about who wouldn't want to live there, right?
Yeah.
But for ego presents that as a nightmare scenario. It'd be just you'd rather be dead.
Yes.
Ego would rather be dead.
Yeah.
Mhm. Because ego is dead under those circumstances.
Because there's no.
Yeah.
You're,
that's
you're
right.
Just literally flowing with life, whatever brings to you at that moment.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
And it's totally taking care of you and supporting you.
Yes. And so much of practice, of course, is learning to be in that place while we have our faculties.
Yes.
So that we can just relax and enjoy it and be grateful to receive the guidance from that still small voice that takes such good care of us, and just be with whatever is.
So the image I'm getting is like you're falling back into this huge feather bed.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Because, you know, Gail, it points to something that if people can experience for themselves what happiness is, then what we realize when we find out for ourselves what happiness is, we realize that happiness, first of all, it's what we are, right? And it exists within us. It is never outside of us. We are never actually brought happiness by anything that's external to us. Even if happiness seems to be caused by something that's external, then if I stop and look, I realize I'm still experiencing it inside. Mm. You mentioned the heart earlier, right? I'm experiencing it in the depths of my being. And so once I realize that, what I get is nothing can take that away from me. Nothing. Because it's who I am. It's what I am.
Yes.
That's the feather bed.
Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so very much. Well, thank you for bringing that up. What fun.
All right.
All right. Take good care.
Bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Gail. And Sherry, it looks like we have time for a couple more callers, so here we go.
All right.
Next
All right.
caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, it's Emily from Seattle.
Hello, Emily.
Hi. I'm been spending a lot of time with my 12-year-old son lately over summer. And
right.
one of the things...
They're very available in the summer, aren't they?
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I've really been working with is how to feel okay when his behavior is not good. And I get so convinced that it's the cause of misery, that it's going to drag me down into misery.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a little flash of it yesterday, of really feeling this freedom and, like, feeling it not related. Like, oh, I can, you know, there's some things that I'm excited about lately that make me feel expansive. And I just had this experience of having, you know, being in that place while this behavior was going on. And
that's illuminating, isn't it?
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
It was just for a second, though, and I got a recording about it.
Yeah, that's all it took, right? That's all it took for you to get it, that expansive feeling is not something that needs to be controlled by his behavior.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So,
let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Emily, let me ask you this. Do you remember being 12?
Yeah. Yeah, I like that age.
And how about 13 and 14?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. But less so.
Maybe.
Puberty?
Yeah.
Puberty?
Yeah. Yeah.
Remember harder. Puberty? Yeah. Yeah. It wasn't that good a time, was it? And as far as I can tell, kids are growing up faster, right, with everything else that's going on, because the world is just going so much faster. I mean, you're not that old. And even when you were 12, the world was a very different place. True?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. For instance, you didn't have some screen in front of your face most of the time, and you weren't in touch with everything that everybody is doing all the time. I mean, remember you had to use a phone and talk to people on the phone and stuff like that. And so I only say all of that to offer you this, that, yes, you do want him to behave to the best of his ability like a civilized human being, right? But not to lose sight of the fact that he's 12, right? He's 12.
Yeah.
And so he is not going to behave the way his mom would like him to all the time. He's just not. And I always console myself that I don't behave the way I think I should all the time. And so that, you know, then there's a little space for how other people are being. So what you have seen is crucial. It's absolutely crucial to realize that you can be in a state of well-being regardless of anything that is happening. And so you can simultaneously, or not simultaneously, that's but in the same sphere, you can be a good parent in the sense that, yes, I love you unconditionally, and no, it's not okay that you do that. And not let whatever is going on with him be something that dictates your life experience.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, I do want to do that. And I think I really, really want that. And I wonder if it's making me a little bit stuck, kind of wanting that. I just feel a little stuck about doing something about the behavior, like
because
he is on the autism spectrum, and so I feel like that's a contributing factor, and that there's some actions that can be taken, and some, like this person, this referral that I had of someone to call, and then I kind of can't get moving in that direction because
That's a different subject.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we can talk about that, but that really is a different subject, right?
From what you were talking about before.
From how he is needs to dictate your life experience. That's the one that you saw. Okay? That's the one I'm going to encourage you to stay with. And the way to expand that is to keep your focus on it. So you make a recording about what you experienced, even though it was just a flash. Okay? And it's going to take a lot of words to describe that flash. And you describe it. And as you describe it, it will become more real to you. Okay? And as it becomes more real to you, you are actually looking for it. So it's not something that exists outside of you that may never happen to you again. It's your experience. Mm-hmm. And it's simply turning attention to it that opens, creates an opening for it to make its way to you again. Because I'm going to project that that's what happened. There was a little space in the bop, 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 inside the head, and this clarity slipped through. And there it is. You have the experience, right? So as you look for it, it's going to be looking for you, and you're going to experience it again. And as you continue in that way, you'll experience it again until it becomes undeniably obvious to you that it is always there when you turn attention to it. And the reason you don't experience it is because the voices in your head get you talking about him and what he's doing and how he's behaving.
Yeah, okay? They do.
So from that place of clarity, from that expanded flash, that's where you're present and the what step to take now becomes available to you.
Yeah, I really, really want to do that.
Yep.
Get back
I know
that
you
place.
Do. I know you do. And so the secret for all of us, whatever it is that those voices in the head want to yammy on about, the secret is turning attention away from that to here, right? And mm-hmm. that's what those recordings will do for you.
Okay. And can I trust that things will get taken care of, or that insights
yes.
will drop in about what
yep.
to do or what motions
yep.
to make?
Yep. And you know what? You know that because you've had the experience. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And is it going to be on our timeline? Oh, I need an answer to this huge situation in my life, and I need it by 7 o'clock tonight. Well, it might not happen. Okay, so that's how we learn patience and humility and all of those kinds of things. But it'll come. It'll come. And it'll be just the right time for you and for him and for everything else.
Okay, thanks for that encouragement in that direction.
You are welcome.
I'm going to do that.
You are welcome. Good.
And
again, you're going to let me know, right?
Yeah.
Because I like to know about these things. I want to know what happened. All right.
Okay, I want to try it. Okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes. You want to do it, right? You want to do it.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Emily.
Okay.
Thanks,
bye.
Emily. Sherry, we have about 4 minutes. Shall we try to squeeze another caller?
Oh,
okay.
Let's do it. Here. What do we have to lose?
Nothing whatsoever. So here we go. Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Oh, my goodness. It's Kim again from Baltimore.
No. Oh,
yes.
My gosh.
I'm so
you know
excited.
What's funny about that, Kim, because when you were talking on the show this morning, you were referring back to a conversation a couple of weeks before. And mm-hmm. you remember that conversation. So we're in a little northwest, whatever it's called here.
A little
right?
loop. I love it.
A little loop. A northwest loop. Yeah. All right.
Well,
so what's going on
I'm
tonight?
I'm checking back because several weeks ago I talked with Jen about a very, very intense situation I was going through at the time. And what she told me to do, which was tremendous, and I did it, was to do a right-handed, left-handed recording, but let that right hand be completely uncensored.
Uh-huh.
And so I did that, and it was mm-hmm. just so, like, everything quieted down, and a little tiny bit of content as I was going to visit a friend who is young, my age, 55, who's dying right now in the hospital with metastatic cancer, and it was just this horrendous situation. And so I did the recording, and my question now is, and I've had this question for a while, with a two-handed recording, what do I do with that uncensored right-hand recording?
With the recording or with the person?
Yeah. No, with the recording. What do I do with that? Because I had this really intense, uncensored, on and on recording from this person in pain, and there's self-hate in it. There's all kinds of things that were, you know, that I just kind of, I got it all out, and then I had this beautiful left-hand recording. And do I keep that right-hand recording?
No reason not to.
So say more about that, please.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't sound like the kind of thing you want to listen to on a regular basis. And
mm-hmm.
yet that person, so there are a couple of things about it, Kim. So one, it sounds like she really did feel heard. She expressed mm-hmm. everything that was going on with her, and she felt heard,
mm-hmm.
and which is very, very good. It doesn't mean she went away. So if you're very, you, Kim, you're very, very mm-hmm. upset about something, and we sit down and you just, you know, just all of it, just everything right there, it all comes out. Afterwards, mm-hmm. you're going to feel kind of relaxed and peaceful and, right, because there's nothing left inside.
Mm-hmm.
And the chances are stuff's going to build back up again.
Mm-hmm.
And so you want to be, you want to know her. You want to be ready if she needs to talk to you again. It could be helpful to listen to it, the recording, in a when you're in a very neutral place, to hear what that self-hate was. And see if that's a familiar kind of a thing that happens. Because if you hear those voices say that again, you want it to kind of catch your attention. Because, right? And then find out who that's being said to and how, you know, like that. So, I don't know if that's helpful, but.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to take time. I know we're getting over here. And what I wanted, you know, because sometimes it hearing that again makes me feel bad. Takes me to that place again, though.
Of being super upset. Is it sad?
Yeah.
Is it painful? Is it?
Yeah.
Well, you know, that's not such a bad thing either. Not the self-hating aspect, but if there's somebody, you know, it's one of the things we talk about, Kim, I can't remember. It seems like it was just this morning, but maybe not, where what we're ultimately doing on this path is preparing ourselves for our own demise, the demise of our loved ones and ourselves. And so being in touch with all of the sadness, being with pain and learning to be all right with that, being able to go to compassion regardless of what we're experiencing, that's really important.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, so you don't have to listen to it every day, but if there's, if there's a feeling of oh God, I don't want to do that again. I don't want to listen to that again. I don't want to hear that again. Then that might be at some point worth looking into.
Right, because perhaps that's ego saying don't listen because you might hear something else that you can be compassionate about. I get it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. You'll know, Kim. You can trust yourself on making your way down that path.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, and thank you, Ashwini.
Thank you.
Thanks, Kim.
Take good care.
Thank you.
And
go ahead.
Go happy. Thanks, Kim. You know what that reminds me of, right, Cherry, is it doesn't matter. We're always practicing compassion. In the first instance, we're practicing listening to giving someone the ability to be authentic and to say what's going on for them. And when we listen to that, no matter where we are, we can get to that place of can we make the movement into compassion?
Yeah. Yeah. We don't have to be afraid of being upset.
That's right.
We don't have to be afraid of our feelings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's a process way in which no matter what happens, I can be there for it.
Yes. Absolutely. Yep. That's freedom
when
we know that.
Yes.
All right.
Exactly.
Is that us?
That is us. And I guess we'll talk again soon.
I bet we will, like maybe tomorrow morning.
Yes, exactly.
All right. Thanks, Ashwini, and thank you, everybody.
Take care, Sherry.
You too. Bye-bye.